Welcome back to another episode of the Jacob Johnston Show. You know, one of the defining features of the Trump presidency was the fact that it gave the conservative movement a backbone that it had been lacking for so long. See, the Republicans and the conservative movement knew all this time that we had the best ideas, that we could create a booming economy, that we could fix 99% of the problems. The issue was the Democrats would always come out there and say, oh, we don't like that. Well, you know, the data supports us. You're a racist. Okay, stop attacking. And that's how the conversation would go. That's how the Republicans would go. Having the great ideas didn't really matter if you didn't have the backbone to actually implement it and stand up to the authoritarian left. But not anymore. Since the Trump presidency, the conservative movement finally realized, yes, you can stand up to the left. Yes, you can go through and shove that whole you're a racist claim by the left and tell them to shove it where the sun don't shine, right? We have a backbone. And as important as that was, the left's disgusting behavior during the Trump presidency, from the complete abuse of power with the whole Trump-Russia claim and going through a whole special counsel investigation and then finding out that the left just made the claim up whole cloth with absolutely nothing of substance to back it up, and that they were paying people to make accusations against the president, all the way to the phony impeachment hearings where they tried to impeach the president of the United States for absolutely no reason whatsoever, just because they didn't like him, orange man bad. And it all culminated to the 2020 election when the Democrats basically decided, you know what, to hell with democracy. We're going to toss every election law out the book. The states don't determine the election laws anymore. Facebook does. And they engage in a fraudulent election, an election that violated the laws and violated the Constitution and installed a president into the White House who is unconstitutionally seated. And as a result, not only do we have the backbone that was given by watching Trump just take it to the Democrats, but Trump's lasting effect is even bigger than what it was before because they made a martyr. They made a martyr when they decided to violate the Constitution, to overthrow the President of the United States and install an unconstitutional fraud. And there is some debate here. What makes Trump's lasting influence on the Republican Party, on the conservative movement, as big as it is? Is it the effect of leadership, or is it having made him a martyr? And maybe the big question is the fact that both happened. He was an effective leader and a martyr, has made him more powerful than he has ever been in the conservative movement. You know, it's kind of like Obi-Wan to Darth Vader, strike me down and I shall become more powerful than even you can imagine. And we're seeing that as Republicans and conservatives have seen not just what happened during the Trump administration, the effective leadership, the booming economy, the rising of all tides. We saw that. But we also saw what the Democrats did in the 2020 election, and we realized that our entire democracy is on the line. Every right and freedom that we have is on the line and under attack by the Democrat Party, and that if we don't stand up for ourselves, if we don't take action, the whole thing is crumbling down. We're going to turn into the Soviet Union. We're going to turn in to Mao Zedong's China if we don't start taking action to stand up to the left. And we are standing up to the left, and we're giving them resistance that they have never faced before. And this resistance to the left, you know, the backlash to everything that the left has done over the last 5-6 years has really been culminating. And it's not just, you know, old white people that the left wants to go off and make claims. It is building a racial coalition here around conservatism. I mean, you could also talk about how President Trump, and one of the defining features of his presidency is that he made inroads to the black community, to the Hispanic community, to the Asian community. He got more votes from all the different groups than any other Republican, and the left freaked out because they are now losing support. And the left going in and engaging in their radical behavior shows more and more people of different identity groups. Oh, the left's different identity groups. The right only has one identity group, Americans. That's it. But the left, when they go through and they say, you know, the black community, well, more and more members of the black community are ditching their Democrat Party. and going off and fighting alongside the Republican Party. The same thing with the Hispanic community and the Asian community. And the left is freaking out because we can see video after video after video of black people rising up. I don't know if they're conservative. I don't know if they've been Democrats their whole life. I don't know what their political ideology of the past has been. I just don't know them. But what I do know is that they are standing up right now and fighting against the left and a lot of the things that they are trying to do, which shows great signs for the 2022 midterms. And the reaction from the left is very funny. And I'll get to that in just a moment. But let me first go off and explain here another reason why the left is losing support. It's because of their whole woke culture. It's their all or nothing ideology or philosophy, where they have this idea that you must agree with them 100% on everything, or you're a horrible, evil person, and they will attack you. But on the right, we're not an all or nothing type of people. You know, we'll see somebody, and they'll be advocating for something that we agree with, and we'll go in and we will fully support them on that issue because we agree with them. And then another issue, we may disagree with them. We don't castigate them as wholeheartedly horrible, evil people just because we disagree on a particular issue, because we may also agree on other issues. In fact, here on the right, one of the defining features, maybe one of the many differences between the right and the left, is that on the right, we actually kind of fear the idea that 100% of everybody agrees with us. If there isn't anybody out there who disagrees with us, we're kind of concerned. We fear the idea of groupthink. We fear the idea of people just mindlessly following everything that we have to say. So we actually like disagreement. We want people to think individually. And the one way to ensure that people are thinking individually is that while they can agree with us on some issues and disagree with us on the other, they don't have to align 100% agreement on every single issue. But on the left, you may agree with them on one particular issue, and then on another issue, you disagree with them. Well, because you disagree with them on any particular issue, you're automatically a horrible, evil person. You are canceled and you are tossed out of what they think they're calling civil society. And they basically say you're a horrible, evil person. You can agree with them on five or six different things and disagree with them on one, and they'll always go through and say you're a horrible, evil person because of the one area that you disagree with them, and then they toss you out. They're basically going off and shooting themselves in the foot, kicking people off their side, kicking people and shunning them and telling them to go away, you horrible, evil person, just because they have a disagreement on one issue, even if they agree on all other issues. That you must be a total groupthink mentality. Either you line up 100% with us or you're against us on everything. And that may be part of the reason why the Democrats continue to go more and more radically insane, because of that whole groupthink mentality, and why the backlash is happening so quickly, so fast, and why it is the Democrats are losing so much support as more and more people are rising up against them. Now, the Democrats don't know how to handle all the people rising up against them, do they? And so when you take a look at something like critical race theory, normally in the past, they would be able to just go out there and say, you're a racist. Oh, you're a white supremacist if you don't agree with this, and people would back down. But instead, that is not happening. People are not backing down just on the claims of you're a racist if you disagree with critical race theory. Now, it doesn't mean that the left has given up on trying that. They have. But even as they try that, one of the problems that they have is a lot of the viral videos that are going around of people speaking out against critical race theory are members of the black community, members of the Hispanic community, members of the Asian community. It is all across the entire, you know, across all races. You know, it's across all races that are going out and speaking up against critical race theory. And the left doesn't know how to handle that, which is why the left is all over the board when it comes to how it is they're trying to address the backlash to critical race theory. Some of them have taken the view of, oh, no, no, no. See, you don't understand. Critical race theory doesn't exist. Critical race theory, it is just a made up right wing boogeyman something that doesn't exist. They're just making it up in order to fearmonger people and just ignore it. You know, there is no such thing as critical race theory. That is on one end of the spectrum where some Democrats and liberals are trying to go off and make that claim. On the other hand, you got other liberals going off and saying, you know, trying to defend critical race theory, not based off of what it actually teaches, but just trying to go off and say, well, it's about equity. Well, what does that mean? What are you teaching in there that actually would lead to your idea of equity? And by the way, where do you think that everybody gets equal outcomes? All right, we only offer equal opportunities. The outcome is up to you. Or, hey, we must go through and make sure we have a true account of history and understand the impact of history on race. Well, can you provide a specific example? No, we're not going to do that. All right, so they go off and they try to give this vague claim of undefined ideas of what they are trying to say critical race theory is and trying to tell us that we just misunderstand, but they can't give any specifics. And then you go all the way over to the complete other side, which knows that they cannot defend critical race theory. So all they do is just say, you need to check your privilege. You're a racist. You're a white supremacist if you do not agree with critical race theory in the classroom. So they're all over the board here. They don't know what to do or how to handle it. They're all the way from completely denying it to lecturing you how you're a horrible, evil, garbage person if you're against it. They're not on the same page. They just don't know how to handle it. And they don't know how to handle it because they have never before really faced this type of opposition. They have never faced a Republican Party, a conservative movement that has a backbone, at least not for decades, not in the lifetime of many of these people on the left. The last time the Republican Party showed a backbone, actually stood up for conservative values, what happened? We crushed the left. We crushed the left. We crushed Jim Crow laws. We crushed the KKK. We decimated the Democrats' racist ideology and policy. And then they had to try and rebuild and remarket. I mean, they're still pushing the same racist ideology. They're still pushing the same Jim Crow philosophy. All they've done is just remarketed it. You know, so, you know, the last time the right stood up with a backbone, we crushed the left. And many of them on the left today have never faced a Republican Party with a backbone because the Republican Party all of a sudden lost their backbone after winning the civil rights movement because the left just kept going, you're a racist, you're a racist, you're a racist. And so with a backbone, they don't know what to do, which explains why they are all over the place, all over the board, not knowing how to respond, which is why they are in complete disagreement on the left now as far as how to handle critical race theory. Does it exist? Does it not exist? Or is it a right-wing boogeyman all made up? Or are you a racist who needs to check your white privilege if you do not support it in the schools? And then you go through and you take a look at how the teachers are trying to go off and lecture everybody. How there are teachers out there trying to push, yes, we need critical race theory in the schools. And I have to go by the idea that, yes, this person is a teacher because in the video, they are in a classroom by a desk. And if this person is a teacher, they are a horrible teacher. They need to be fired because they're not doing the students any bit of good. In fact, I'd say one of the biggest problems that we have in the public education system are the teachers, who are basically subverting education and trying to push political indoctrination, who are lying and gaslighting the students. But you notice how the left tries to avoid in any way, shape, or form defining anything. So I'm going to go ahead and play a clip from a teacher who is out there trying to support or trying to say, yes, critical race theory is needed in the school and that you're horrible if you do not agree to critical race theory being taught in the school. And here's how that sounds like.
So this comment right here is asking me to explain why not wanting critical race theory in the classroom is racist. Thank you for asking me this question. I'd love to explain it. So critical race theory talks about how the systems that we have, the laws that we have, how all of those are designed to oppress people groups. things like mass incarceration, the prison industrial system, the military industrial system, all of those are used to oppress people groups. By teaching this in the classroom, we can show our kids what systems need to be challenged and thought about differently. Racism isn't going to be fixed by me going down to a kid right here and saying, "Hey, buddy, you really need to be nicer to that kid over there, even though they look a little bit different than you." We can dismantle racism by dismantling systems of oppression, not by being nice to people. When you don't want to teach future generations about how these systems were designed to oppress people, you're taking the side of the oppressor, being racist.
Now, there are two parts when it comes to addressing this video. All right, so let me get to the first part now. And that is the lack of actual examples or details or facts. I mean, I get it. You're in a video. You don't have a whole lot of time. I believe this is on TikTok to be able to go through and make your entire case as to why it is you are making the claim that these systems are systemically racist. But could you at least provide one example? Can you provide at least one law, one policy, one something that tries to go off and give credence to your ideas or claim that the system is systemically racist? They can't, because the whole point of trying to claim that a system is systemically racist is to avoid being able to or avoid having to provide any details or examples, because they just say, well, it's not just one thing. It's a culmination of everything. Well, can you provide that? I mean, you're making the claim. So go ahead and put the pieces together. Go ahead and connect the dots for us. What is it that you are seeing here in these systems that provides any credence to your ideas or claims that there is systemic racism? They can't. The whole point is to avoid having to provide any examples, to just give a high-level accusation, because the moment you try to give an example, that example can be analyzed. That example can actually be researched, and people can actually come through and determine whether or not your claims are complete BS or not. And that's why they go off and they avoid trying to go off and provide any specific examples, because the moment they do, their claims will be completely debunked. So they just go off and they want to just say, well, it's all racist. It's all systemically racist. It's all a culmination of things. So as long as they can avoid providing a specific example, you can't really rebuttal. Because if you go off and you try to do your research and go, no, it's not, and then you give your research, they're just going to come back and say, well, that's not what I'm talking about when I'm talking about systemic racism. And therefore, you haven't debunked my claim. Well, what is your claim? And then they'll avoid giving you their claim. I mean, but to this guy's credit, he at least tries to name what systems he is saying is institutionally racism, is systemically racist. He doesn't provide any examples within those systems about why it is he is making the claim that they're systemically racist. So he actually does try and go through a little bit more detail than most liberals who just say the entire society is systemically racist. All systems are systemically racist. And you can't go through and go, well, is affirmative action systemically racist? And then watch them try and trip over themselves on that one. And they'll go, no, 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 that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about all the other systems. But at least this guy has gone through and tried to say or identify what systems he claims is racist, even though he can't provide you any details or examples as to why he says they are racist. And one of the things that he tries to go off and say as an example of a system that is systemically racist is the prison industrial complex. Okay. All right, you name the system. Now tell me, what is it about the prison system that you are saying is racist? Provide, what is it about that system? If you can point out something that shows that there is actual racism in our prison system, I'd like to hear it. And if there is actual racism in the prison system, hey, guess what? I would stand up and fight alongside you in order to end that racist system. But they can't provide anything. They can't provide an example. They just go off and I guess the most that they'll do is try and say, well, black people are incarcerated more often than other races. Okay, okay. Did they commit the crime? That would be the natural response. Can you show me somebody who is in there because of their race and not because of the crime they committed? Because the system doesn't go off and choose who is and is not committing the crimes. The law is the law. And so if we go through and we put down this law and say, hey, this is a law, and this is the punishment, prison time for breaking the law. And then you have people who go out there and break the law, knowing what they are doing is illegal. And it's people of all races, you know, white, black, Hispanic, and Asian. But one group of people commits a crime at a greater frequency than another group of people, then yes, they would end up in jail as a higher percentage of the population. And by the way, the lower the population size, the higher the percentage of the population each individual accounts for. So you could have, you know, 50 black people, 50 white people, 50 Asian people, 50 Hispanic people, you know, all equal numbers in prison, all for the same crime, serving the same sentence. But because the population size of the total population is so different, the percentage of the population of that race compared to the total population becomes different. So they're not making an apples to apples comparison. Now, I'm not saying there's equal numbers of everybody in the prison. I'm just trying to go off and explain how they don't necessarily give you apples to apples comparisons when they go off and they talk about this. But and then it goes off and you ask yourself, hey, you're saying the prison system is racist. Provide an example. You know, provide an example of someone who's sitting in jail, not because they committed a crime, but because of their skin color. And if you try to do that, they can't do it. They can't do it. They try to find an excuse as to why they shouldn't be having to provide you any examples whatsoever. No, it's just all racist. Really. That is your claim. I mean, you're making a claim here. It's up to you to prove your claim. So provide me some evidence that there's any legitimacy to your claim. They can't do it. And then they go off and want to try and talk about the military industrial complex. Okay, what's the example there? Provide one thing about the military that you are claiming is racist. And again, they're not able to do so. They don't want to do so because the moment they try to provide a specific example, that example is going to be crushed because it's all a bunch of BS and they know it. Now, the second issue that I want to go off and point out here with the video that this guy had gone through, and I know, audio show, you only got to hear the audio portion of it. But another thing is, look at the institutions that they are trying to target and claim are systemically racist. Law enforcement, military, and if you were to ask them to keep naming the institutions, guess what you would find out? The institutions that they are claiming are systemically racist and that need to be thrown out are the institutions vital to the safety and security of the country, are institutions that are vital to civil society. And that is no accident. It is no accident. The Marxists know that if they are to overthrow a country, overthrow a free society and the democracy that supports that society, they need to tear down every system designed to protect democracy, every system designed to protect civil society. So they have to collapse the systems if they're going to go through and they're going to overthrow society and institute a new world order. Because as long as the institutions exist that protect civil society, they will never be able to fully accomplish their goal, which is overthrow the Constitution, overthrow democracy, and have an authoritarian, you know, the ruling of the elitists to dictate everything about every aspect of life to every person in the country. So they got to attack everything and they need to find new victim groups in order to claim that they are standing up for some type of social justice, some form of equality, you know, even though they can't actually provide any real examples of inequality or discrimination because what it is they're trying to claim, like transgenderism, guess what? There is no such thing as a transgendered person. There is no such thing as a person who can change their gender. Your gender is determined at the moment of conception, and it's determined by biology. But they have to go off and try and find new victim groups in order to try and claim that society is horrible, in order to try and convince you that it is the systems that are horrible and wrong. Therefore, you must tear down the systems. Well, what are you going to replace the system with? Authoritarian ideology. And so, yes, this is what it's all about. This is why they don't provide examples and why the institutions that they are targeting are what they are targeting. They don't provide examples because they can't provide any evidence to support their claims, and they're targeting the institutions that are vital to civil society. And the Democrats are so used to being able to get away with this, just make a vague claim and then start demonizing anybody who goes off and disagrees with them or asks them for specific examples. So now that they are facing a Republican Party with a backbone standing up to them and seeing that more and more people are leaving the Democrat Party and joining the conservative movement to push back, at least on certain issues, is why the Democrats can't figure out how to answer this, how to come back and try and defend it, which is why you see some people trying to say, oh, critical race theory doesn't exist, to, hey, you're a horrible racist if you are against the teachings of critical race theory. But the damage within the Democrat Party goes beyond that. And there's a lot of, well, development of the cohesion that has defined the Democrat Party. You know how they always go through like the Borg hive mind in full agreement on everything. They stick together no matter what on every single issue. Well, that is starting to break down. Turns out that that cohesion and Borg-like mentality has only been able to be accomplished because of the lack of pushback, because they haven't really faced any real opposition. And now that they are, and it's hurting the party, now the Democrats are starting to go off and engage in friendly fire among themselves. You got leftists canceling other leftists. You have Democrats, you know, in disagreement on the messaging of how to handle a particular issue. And you got longtime leftists attacking other leftists, calling them out and accusing them of racism as well. I mean, it is so bad that one environmental group actually disbanded itself, accusing itself of racism. I mean, it is really kind of funny when you go off and you hear about that and you read about that. But now you have Al Sharpton out there attacking other liberals. Now, it is completely lost on him how his attacks are completely hypocritical. But now you see leftists more and more attacking each other. Why? Because authoritarians love power. And what is the fuel of power? People bowing down to you. And so if conservatives are no longer bowing down and rolling over, in order to fill that authoritarian nature, they need to go after people who will bow down and roll over for them. And unfortunately for them, the only people left are their own people, are their own side, their own coalition. And now they're attacking that. And so here's Al Sharpton on Morning Schmo. Well, it's actually called Morning Joe, MSNBC. A complete idiot tries to pretend like he was ever a conservative. If he ever was, he sold out for whatever money he's making for his MSNBC show. But in any event, Al Sharpton goes on there and starts attacking other liberals. And here's how that sounds like.
And I think that one of the problems that we have, which is why I call them latte liberals, is we're having people assess what has happened that they were not the ones that it was happening to. So if you're sitting around sipping lattes in the Hamptons, talking about what's going on in Harlem, you may not know the progress that we have made in terms of going from not being able to vote in my mother and father's generation to electing a black president in my generation, because you were never discriminated against. And I think that a lot of people have taken advantage of our pain rather than trying to ease our pain, whether it comes to race, whether it comes to gender, whether it comes to those in the LGBTQ community.
Now, here is ultra-liberal Al Sharpton, who has a disgusting and horrible history, going out there and attacking other leftists, other liberals, going off and say the latte liberals. And he's going out and attacking them. Why? Because he knows that only the left, only other leftists will bow down if he goes out there and starts making accusations against them, especially if the people he is attacking is white and he is black, because they have this whole hierarchical, you know, structure whereby the color of your skin and your genitalia determines who has more power than the other person, who should be listened to more, and who you should bow down to. So if Al Sharpton, being a black man, is making the accusation of latte liberals against white liberals, then the white liberals must roll over and concede because he is a black man, and therefore it's too much white privilege and example of racism to them for them to come back and try to refute it. And there are multiple ways in which you can dissect and analyze the statement that is being made by Al Sharpton, you know, and what is going on within the Democrat Party. So without Democrats without Republicans bowing down anymore. The authoritarian nature of the left is they need to feel their feeling, their ego, and their sense of their own power and self-worth. And if only other liberals are going to go through and bow down, hey, that's who you attack. But also there is the issue of too many liberals standing up for so many different issues, right? You can see this, where authoritarians do not like to share power. There's too many leftists gaining too much power because there are so many different issues and gaining power on every single issue. Al Sharpton sees that his own influence, his own power is being diminished because there's too many other people stepping up as leaders for this issue and that issue and all that and all of that. So he must smack them down and try to consolidate those issues under him as the only real authority to be able to talk about and address those issues. And so everyone else must shut up, and therefore there is no longer any diminishing of his own power. So you can see where some of that is, you know, where some of the older leaders are trying to smack down some of the younger leaders because as more leaders within their party rise up on every issue, it diminishes the power, authority, and influence of the older leaders. So you can see how the authoritarian nature is also about smacking down and keeping people down on their own side from being able to rise up. But let's face it, what Al Sharpton said there is complete hypocrisy. You know, he's going out there and talking about the latte liberals. I got a news flash. Al Sharpton, you are the latte liberal. I mean, you want to go off and say, well, if you haven't lived in Harlem, when was the last time you lived in Harlem? I mean, how many decades has it been? And as far as taking advantage of the black community, you, Jesse Jackson, but more so you, have taken advantage of the black community probably just as much, if not more, than any of the latte liberals that you claim. I mean, seriously, go off and take a look at the history of Al Sharpton. He goes off there. He's a race baiter. He's made his entire career as a race baiter, going through trying to find any situation in which he can manipulate for his own financial benefit, where, let's say, you know, there is a police shooting, right? Let me give an example here. There is a police shooting. There's actual video of the person shooting at the police officers and the police officers having to return fire to defend themselves. He would go out there and he would try and race bait, try to claim, you know, this is an attack on the black community, that this is racism. And he was one of the first people to do this. I mean, he was pioneering this all the way back in the 90s, where he would go off and try and claim anything that ever happened to any black person, whether they were, you know, shot by gangs or by police officers, or whether or not, you know, they got injured while resisting arrest and trying to fight back, or even things that didn't have to do with, you know, the police or anything. He would go off there and be one of the first people, like an ambulance chaser, to show up at the doorstep of any family member who was grieving about anything. All right. And then he would go off and try and play in to their grief and, you know, the anger that they're feeling as a result of their grief, try and direct that their anger and hate towards something that was not actually the cause of a person's death or injury. And then he would go out, organize marches, and then he would do fundraising off of that march. And then he would pocket the money that he made fundraising. And then all of a sudden, the people that he was claiming to help just disappear from media coverage. Now, maybe he provided 10% of the fundraising to that family, or, you know, a donation to a cause in the name of, you know, whatever person that they're grieving over. But he would pocket most of that money. He made millions fundraising off of other people's griefs. And he hasn't lived in Harlem for decades now. You know, he is the latte liberal, and he became the latte liberal by taking advantage of other members of the black community. Now, Al Sharpton, his hypocrisy knows no bounds. All right. So in that same interview, he goes off and makes another statement that shows a complete and total lack of self-awareness. And here's what that sounds like.
I think that if you're going to fight to be included, we're fighting for inclusion. You can't fight for inclusion and practice exclusion. In many ways, you are contradicting your own message. You're trying to replace those that have discriminated or cut you out rather than be the alternative by expanding it for everyone. I welcome talking to people that disagree with me. I welcome talking to people that are on the other side, because then we can come to an understanding which may advance things, because I have enough confidence in what I believe in my argument in order to convert them.
Now, I just have to say here, something is going on in the Democrat Party, and it's very hard for me to be able to pinpoint what that is. I mean, I just played a couple of clips here, but something is going on in the Democrat Party. And on the one hand, I want to be hopeful. On the other hand, given the Democrats' history, I am very skeptical. And so you see how Democrats are turning on each other. And they are going off and attacking each other and saying, hey, what you are doing here is not helping. You're just taking advantage of people, you know, with what Al Sharpton was saying about the latte liberals, even though there was a bit of hypocrisy in that. But then you now see, whether it's Al Sharpton, Bill Maher, or certain others who have been lifelong liberals engaged in every insane left-wing policy and have been part of pushing left-wing policy, coming out and stating conservative talking points while attacking leftists, other leftists. And I don't get it. So, for instance, Al Sharpton in this particular clip was talking about, you know, wanting to go through and have open debate, that you can't be inclusive if you are trying to exclude people, exclude them from being able to talk, exclude them from debate, exclude them from being able to express their opinion and our ideas, which is a conservative talking point. Now, again, we could talk about the hypocrisy of Al Sharpton, whose career has not only been about taking advantage of the black community, you know, and what he would consider his own people, you know, although I just see everyone as American here. But in any event, while he has gone through and benefited from that, he has also benefited from cancel culture, shutting down debate, trying to dodge debate. Now, his whole statement there about, hey, I am so confident in my own position and being able to persuade other people to my side that I encourage and agree with the idea of open debate, which, again, is funny considering that his positions, anytime he has ever been challenged, have completely fallen apart. He can't debate or persuade anybody. But the issue here is that he seems to be going out there and he seems to be advocating for free speech and open debate, and almost seems like he's talking out against cancel culture. And so I don't know what's going on the left here. I really don't. You know, you got people who have benefited from the left wings shutting down debate, cancel culture, taking advantage of minorities, now coming out and seemingly acting as though they're speaking out against it. Is this a fox in the hen house, or is there something going on in the Democrat Party where they realize that what they are doing and seeing it being turned on themselves are now going off and saying, hey, we've unleashed Frankenstein's monster here. We need to go back and try and correct this and use everybody who has any position of influence among the left in order to go off and speak out against this, even if what we are doing is parroting and promoting conservative talking points about free speech. So, I mean, it is really interesting to be able to go through and see this and see how the people seemingly appear hypocritical. Because when they go off there and they attack other leftists and what the left has done, they seemingly seem to ignore their own involvement in that. And so there's that hypocrisy there. But then there's the right-wing talking points that they are parroting. Hey, if you want to be inclusive, you got to stop cancel culture. You know, you got to allow for free speech and debate. Let people debate their ideas, learn from each other, learn from different opposing views, and then incorporate the best policy positions, the best views backed by data from each side of the argument to create the best possible outcome you can. You know, because it's through debate and disagreement where we can find the flaws in each other's arguments, where and flaws in our own arguments can be pointed out, and then we can refine those ideas, refine those theories, refine those policies to to produce a better outcome than what was otherwise achievable. And so I don't know. I don't know what to make of what's going on the left here. You know, whether it's just a matter of self-preservation, seeing how everything that they've been using against the left is now them using against each other, and those who are at the top of the leadership on the left are now coming out kind of afraid about how anybody towards the bottom looking to replace them only needs to do to them what they've done to Republicans, and now saying, hey, my power's in trouble here. I need to kind of try and correct this and, you know, go the opposite direction. I don't know if that's the issue or if they just see, hey, you know, we've gone overboard. People are leaving us in droves, you know, and it's really hurting the party and our prospect of future political power. So we need to try and make a correction here, or whether this is just a false herring, whereby, as the Democrats tend to do, they say one thing and then they mean another, you know, where they try to talk and use the language of inclusivity, of social justice, of wanting to define the facts and the truth objectively, while at the same time doing the exact opposite. So I don't know. I don't know what to tell you here about what is going on. But I do know that, you know, if the left and certain leftists want to come out and promote conservative ideas on free speech or on anything, okay, I'll support them in that particular issue. But it's not like I'm going to forget everything that they've done in the past leading up to this point, or suddenly agree with them on everything. No, no, no. I mean, I can go through, and this is one thing that the left doesn't understand. The right decides that we will agree with people on issue by issue basis. We'll agree with you on one issue, we'll disagree with you on another issue. We may be opposed 99% of the time on issue after issue, but on the one issue where we do agree, okay, I'll work with you on that issue, but I will work against you on all these other issues that I disagree with you with, right? It's not personal for the right. We just believe in trying to push through the best ideas. For the left, it is completely personal. You disagree with them on one thing, and they consider you a traitor who has no place within their party. So again, I don't know what's going on here where even Al Sharpton is now trying to say, hey, you know, we need to be inclusive and not just exclude people from debate because of identity politics, or that, hey, you know, maybe when we go out and debate, it should be based off of, you know, the strength of our ideas and not our ability to shut people out of debate and shut down debate. I don't know what's going on there. I have a fundamental distrust, though, of the messenger. But all I'm saying is there is something going on within the Democrat Party as they are at least giving lip service more and more to conservative ideas, conservative philosophy of free and open debate, of, you know, the First Amendment. I don't know what to tell you there. Okay, so there is more things that are going on here. So, as you know, there has been some problems in some left-wing cities with the police officers, and not police brutality, but that is that police officers are retiring en masse. You know, whether they're retiring from specialized units or just retiring from the force altogether or just leaving the left-wing cities and going off and signing up as police officers in conservative cities where they will be treated better. And by the way, there's less crime to worry about. So they have the same job, maybe have the same pay, but yet there's less work to do because there's less crime in conservative cities. And if they enforce the law, guess what? They're not going to end up going to jail just for enforcing the laws that the politicians pass. Just because somebody claims that, well, because of my skin color, I'm supposed to be immune from law enforcement and be able to commit any crime that I want. And so it's no wonder that police officers are abandoning and resigning from left-wing cities all over the place, and they're having problems, including with the defund the police movement. So what is also adding and contributing to this is that, you know, the police officers, they don't feel like they're actually accomplishing anything anymore. They don't. So they go out there, they risk their life. And if they end up in a situation where they have to defend themselves or they will be killed, right, then they either lay down their lives to be slaughtered by the criminals, or they defend themselves In which case, the left will demonize them, attack them, and demand that they be prosecuted and put in jail. It is basically a no-win situation for the police. And as a result of the left's attack on the police and the defund the police movement and supporting of criminals, we now show that data here that there is an increase in law enforcement officers' death as crime rates surge. So as the police are being demonized and the left takes the side of criminals, there has been a sharp increase in the number of police officers who are killed in the line of duty. Why? Because now they are fearful. If they defend themselves, they're going to be prosecuted. So they're overanalyzing, hesitating on various situations. And as a result, more police officers are being killed while the criminals are just basically being supported by the Democrat Party, which is one of the reasons why the police officers are starting to leave the police force, at least in liberal cities, in larger and larger numbers. It's a no-win situation for them. And as they have to go through and analyze the situation more, rather than say, hey, that person has a gun, they're aiming at me, I better shoot them before they shoot me, now they're having to overthink it. And so you also see the Democrats and their support of criminals basically telling criminals that, hey, guess what? It is Christmas for criminal behavior. You can do whatever you want without consequence. And it's open season on the police officers. Is it any wonder that crime is surging? Crime is surging as the left is going out there and they are supporting the criminals and attacking the police. It is real sickening and real sad. And then to top it all off, a piece from Just the News titled "Many New York City Riot and Looting Cases from 2020 Were Dropped." So here it is. Police are being killed in larger numbers. Criminals are being supported by the Democrats. If police officers are forced to defend themselves, the left wants to throw them in jail, which you can say is why there's an increase in police officers being killed, because their only option is let themselves be killed or go to prison. And just as bad, or even worse than all of that, is what is the end result? Let's say they have a perfect situation. A crime is reported, they respond, they're not forced to defend themselves, they're able to arrest the criminal and put him in jail. Well, the left is just going to drop all charges and release them back into society anyways. Report from Just the News: many New York City riot and looting cases from 2020 were dropped. So there you have it, folks. If you're wanting to know what's going on, why there is such a rise in crime, it's because of the attack on the police. It's because of the demonizing, the defunding, the attempts to prosecute them if they have to defend themselves, even if in defending themselves it doesn't result in the criminal being killed. They go through all of that, you know, risking their lives or going into jail for enforcing the law, and then being demonized, criminals being told it's pretty much open season on the police. And yet, if the police manage to do their job, catch a criminal, arrest them, put them in jail, the criminals are just released back onto the streets. I mean, there is absolutely no reason that I can think of why any sane, rational person would become a police officer in a left-wing city. The fact that there are any police officers left only goes and shows the dedication that these men and women have to wanting to serve and protect the community, despite them being attacked on all fronts, attacked by the criminals and attacked by the politicians, the Democrats, who for some reason feel like they have to support criminals and telling criminals it's Christmas, you can do whatever you want and there's no consequences. It is just unbelievable. And how anybody supports that is mind-boggling to me. In fact, the very fact that the people who are victimized the most by left-wing policy, whose communities are damaged the most by left-wing politicians, are out there supporting left-wing politicians in overwhelming numbers. It's like, hey, we hate ourselves, so we're going to continue to vote for Democrats to continue destroying us. That's what it seems like from an outside observation of taking a look at what's going on in these left-wing cities. It's just an absolute nightmare. Okay, so we have another article here, this one from Reason.com. Colorado court slaps baker with fine for refusing to make gender transition cake. So here we are, the same baker that was at the heart of the last case involving gay weddings, where he wasn't even refusing to go through. Yeah, I know. You could probably hear the paper moving in the background, but here we have a baker who was willing to go ahead and sell a cake, you know, for a gay wedding. His only objection was to using his art and craft to create a personalized cake, right? Hey, I'll sell you anything that's on the floor. I'm just not going to personalize anything for you. And the left went off and tried targeting him, you know, which in doing so, they were violating his First Amendment rights. And they went through, and the Colorado system went through and said, hey, you know, you're going to be fined unless you use your craft in a manner that amounts to compelled speech to create a customized cake for this wedding. Forced participation, forced to compelled speech, right? I mean, you take a look at most any businesses, and what do you say? They have the right to refuse service to any customer, not based off of race, but based off of maybe they don't agree with the actions and behavior of that customer. Maybe the customer's getting unruly. Well, in this particular situation, you have a small business owner who operates based off of religious beliefs. And while he will sell baked goods to people who operate in violation of his religious beliefs, he's not going to condone or engage in things that are in opposition to his beliefs by customizing, by engaging in his craft to personalize something. So he's not even denying them service. He's just not willing to participate or provide participation into things that he disagrees with. Well, the Supreme Court smacked down Colorado, but they did so on very narrow grounds, as to basically they erased the fines, said Colorado can't fine them, but on the bigger issue, they had punted. So now it's not just gay couples, but now it's somebody who's wanting to go through and get a cake to celebrate their claimed transition, you know, wants this baker to participate in the delusion of transgenderism, gender dysphoria. And again, he goes, well, you can pick any cake, you know, any of the generic cakes that I have out here. I'm not going to personalize or customize a cake because that is compelled speech in violation of my religion, of my First Amendment right. And so now he's being sued yet again. You know, isn't it amazing how the left always goes through, once they find somebody that they know is conservative or religious or whatever, and they keep targeting them? I mean, I'm sure this person can go to a dozen other bakers and who will create them a customized cake. But instead, they specifically target this person, this baker, and trying to force him to violate his own religious beliefs in order to make him a cake. You know, and yet, you know that if they ever tried going to, say, a Muslim baker and ask, hey, I need you to bake me a cake specifically for a transition ceremony or celebration, if the Muslim baker said, no, that violates my faith, I'm not going to customize a cake for you, the left will just go, okay, we can't touch this person, just walk away, go to another baker. But if it's a Christian baker following Christian beliefs, they attack them. And it's not just one. They attack, they all start flocking to him en masse in order to demand that he violates his religious beliefs in order to cater to them. And they keep going through so that they could try and claim discrimination and get the government more and more involved in trying to punish the baker for daring to have a belief outside of leftism. And when one line of attack fails, such as with gay weddings, the gay weddings, you know, that's not an issue that I'm actually concerned about. I mean, we can go through and talk about what the definition and purpose of marriage is and all of that, but that's besides the point. When that failed, though, now they're going in with the transgender community in order to try and punish this baker. And what they're really trying to do is force this baker out of business, because he is Christian. I believe he's a white male Christian. So they are targeting him. At this point, you can say that the left is harassing this baker, and with only one goal in mind, trying to destroy this baker. in Colorado because he will not bow down to them. He will not put them above his religious beliefs. And so they're just going in and they're constantly attacking. He should start filing countersuits against them for harassment, for attempting, for violating First Amendment rights. Of course, they're going to go off and say, well, these are private citizens that, you know, are going in and harassing him, you know, but there's got to be some sort of recourse when the left-wing mob is targeting you, repeatedly, maliciously going after you. And the more you stand up for yourself, your rights and your religious beliefs, the more they want to go off and target and harass you. This is just wrong. This is just wrong. And the courts here are, in a lot of ways, to blame for refusing to actually address the issue the first time when they had the opportunity. Just sickening. Okay, and so there is one last thing that I wanted to address. You know what? Taking a look at the length of the show at this particular point, I'm going to have to go ahead and move this last article that I want to get to over into tomorrow's episode. I don't want this to go on for another 20 minutes. All right, so I'm going to go ahead, and it's an issue regarding transgenderism and such. So I'm going to go ahead, and I'm just going to move that to tomorrow's episode and go ahead and wrap up today's episode. All right, so if you're a first-time listener, I want to thank you for listening in. Don't forget to hit subscribe. I hope you enjoyed the content. And don't forget to leave me a rating and review. Share this around on whatever social media platforms still allow links to the show to be shared on, you know, such as Parler, Gab, MeWe. Go ahead and post it and share it on Minds, Reddit even. If you can still post it on Facebook and Twitter, hey, that's great. Go ahead, post it there, share it. The best way to counteract the left is to drown them out with conservative voices. You can drown out crazy by flooding the internet with rational and sane thoughts and opinion. All right, just drown them out. All right, they can talk all they want, but let's make sure we talk louder. All right, thank you so much, and I will be back again soon.